Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar on build-to-rent real estate investing for self-directed IRAs with our special guest, Freedom Venture Investments. I do have to read a brief disclaimer before we do get started. The Entrust Group does not provide any investment advice nor endorse any products. All information and materials are for educational purposes only. All parties are encouraged to consult with their attorneys, accountants, and financial advisors before entering into any type of investment. Today's agenda for our webinar will be the first. We'll learn a little bit about Entrust and Freedom Venture, and then an overview of why real estate and why multifamily, the state of the market deep dive, what's the process for identifying opportunities, what's on our radar, how do you use the information, and at the end, we will have some time for a question and answer period. A little bit about myself. My name is Tony Uncle. I am the business development manager here at the Entrust Group. I've been with Entrust for a little over 4 years, and we do specialize in educating investors and professionals on tax-preferred retirement accounts. A little about Entrust. We have a little over $4 billion in assets under administration, with 45,000 investors empowered, 40 plus years in business. And the most important part about Entrust is that we do have one single point of contact for all of our clients. We are self-directed IRA administrators, knowledgeable staff with mostly CIP designations. We do have nationwide offices based on regions for that single point of contact. We host in-person events and virtual webinars. We have a national continuing education program for other credentials, including our biannual IRA Academy. What is a self-directed IRA? A self-directed IRA is a retirement account in which the individual investor is in charge of making all investment decisions. Self-directed IRAs provide greater opportunity for asset diversification outside of your traditional stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. All securities and investments are held in a retirement account administered by a regulated custodian or trustee. I'll now turn it over to Dave Seymour. He is the CEO of Freedom Venture Investments. Dave, the floor is yours.
Hey, Tony, thank you for that. Hi, I appreciate you being here. My name is Dave Seymour. I am the CEO of Freedom Venture Investments. You got to love that house cleaning component of a webinar. If you can get through that material and the necessaries, the outline and the description of what to come, then I love to get into the meat and potatoes of why you're here today. Look, if this is the very first webinar that you've attended within this fantastic organization, congratulations and welcome. And if you've never attended, or you've attended many of these types of seminars, webinars, right? Then I also commend you. And the reason that I do that is very simply this: investigating the education is critical. An educated investor, we always say at Freedom Venture, is a better partner. But to be a partner, it's always about implementing the education. So I have the ability to teach you, share with you what we're doing in our business, a little bit about our company. But think about this. If you're a note taker, you might want to put at the top of your note page, implementation. Education's great, but how do I implement it going forward? So who am I? Maybe you recognize my crazy accent. Maybe you don't. I am Dave Seymour. I'm the CEO of Freedom Venture Investments. We are a private equity boutique real estate investment company. You might recognize me from the hit TV show Flipping Boston. We had some fun on the A&E network. Don't go looking for it, though. I now know that I am in the vault with Dog the Bounty Hunter, Billy the Bug Guy, and a few other shows that were airing back when we were on TV. But I've been in real estate for many, many years. Something that I wanted to just attach to this presentation today is the fact that I feel like the guy from Hair Club for Men. I'm not only a client, I'm also the president. I, like you, have a self-directed retirement account with Entrust. And the day that I found out that I was capable of taking control of my own investment strategies, living and dying by my own decisions and not letting somebody else control my financial future, it was a massive, massive impactful moment for me. And I commend you for being you know, a client of Entrust and directing your own investments. My team that you can see up here, Walter Nowicki is our chief investment officer, 30 plus years in the business. I'll talk more about him later. He's the secret sauce to our team, if you will. Jackson Stith joined us. Jackson has a very, very extensive background. He has been a participant in north of $9 billion worth of real estate transactions, either in the underwriting side, the development side, construction side of the business. Brings a lot of experience and power to our team. And then the youth on the team, Mr. Eric Wilson, is an accomplished financial professional. I actually stole Eric from Fidelity. Eric brings a lot of the technical support. He's the glue that runs our team and keeps us moving in the right direction, offering service to our client base going forward. So why real estate? Look, we're in an environment right now, let's all be very, very frank. I think we can say with honesty, it's not the most serene of investment environments right now. And yet there are a couple of investment classifications that have historically been able to stay the course, if you will, through volatile times. And real estate is one of those. I've never been a proponent when it comes to investing personally or sharing my experience with anybody else who has an interest in the sense of investing is this or that, right? It's the stock market and bond market or it's real estate. I think for me, I've always, again, been a proponent of this and that. Why can't we have all options in a portfolio is a question I've been asked, and it's a question I ask of people going forward. So commercial real estate, I've classified it personally for my own dialogue, if you will. I think of it as the Clydesdale of real estate investing. It's not what we did on the TV show, you know, the buy, fix and flip, you know, paint carpet, cushions and all of that stuff. It's a mature investment. It's one that works over a period of time. And it's been one of the most attractive investments for a classification. And if you, again, you take notes, I'm going to talk about the elite one percenters. I'm going to talk about the elite investment population or community. I talk about the institutional quality investors and investments that are out there. And commercial real estate has been a part of that. Basically broken down into four classifications, as you can see on the screen. There's multifamily, industrial, office, and retail. And what I'll show you during this presentation is why multifamily has been so attractive to us as investors at a high level going forward. During the course of the presentation, you may very well find yourself beginning to get some confidence in what could be next in the volatile marketplace. Why do those one percenters love this asset class? Well, low correlation to other assets, high absolute returns, reduces portfolio volatility. And let's look on the left-hand side of my screen there, talking about a hedge against inflation. We all know what the inflationary market is like. You know, we're recording this on, what's today's date? It's Wednesday. And I know that today, those good old boys down at the Federal Reserve are going to do a little bit of business and welcome another maybe 75 or 100 basis points or a 1% interest hike. Well, they're trying to reduce inflation. They're trying to stop spending because there's so much capital in the marketplace. I'm going to talk about that a little bit as well. Important to note, Blackstone. We're familiar with Blackstone, came out of the crash. Blackstone targets $25 billion for real estate fund to beat inflation. So the institutions want what we have at Freedom Venture Investments. That's why we're so bullish and aggressive. I'm going to make a profound statement for some people to hear. Other people are going to understand it. I don't know you yet. Looking forward to getting to know you on a more personal level. But we are going to build through the recession. We are going to go on the offensive through the recession and not the defensive. You know, who's invested in this in the past? I talked about wealthy individuals, family offices, pension funds have invested in this asset class for generations, sovereign wealth funds. I just did a little research today. The amount of international capital that is poured into our bond market this year alone has been unprecedented. The capital is chasing the U.S. economy because it sees opportunity. Large private equity firms, maybe real estate investment trusts, could be something that an investor is familiar with. Then there's small private syndicators or private equity groups like ourselves. Non-accredited private investors have invested in these asset classes as well. Very pleased to say at Freedom Venture Investments, we're able to work with both accredited and not accredited investors. And then we have a lot of relationships with investors who carry a self-directed individual retirement account and also solo 401ks. So what is it about multifamily? What's attractive to the investment dollars in the marketplace? We always talk about historical norms, if you will, in real estate. We all know it's cyclical. The single family retail market is cyclical, as is the commercial real estate market. Multifamily apartment complexes, both large and small, have a very strong historical performance. They offer greater diversity in tenant base. Some investors like to go in the C-class housing market and deal with tenant challenges. Some investors just like the slow and steady of an A-class asset, not dealing with any tenant challenges or location challenges. But the bottom line is this: everybody, not just somebody, but everybody needs a place to live. And when we look at the data from the National Council of Real Estate Investment Fiduciaries, when you pull down the risk profile in comparison to the return profile, you can see there that multifamily, the orange disc on the left-hand side, has historically performed high, you know, maybe 10.5, 9.5, 10%. And yet its exposure, its risk exposure, has been comparatively low. So the question could be, you know, what investments are out there that have a high risk profile with a low risk exposure? Multifamily has done that historically for generations. You know, the Yale endowment knows the answers to this. Blackstone knows the answer to this. Think of the large wealthy families, maybe in New York, know this. It's been a part of their portfolio. We pulled down some data recently, just putting a small percentage of multifamily investments into a portfolio has typically increased its performance year over year. Multifamily real estate has actually outperformed the stock market 12 out of the last 15 years. That's a bold statement as well. Do your research. You can find that data as well going forward. So it's great that it works, Dave. It's great that it's a good investment potentially, Dave. You know, how do you analyze it? Well, if you have any familiarity with commercial real estate, this won't be new to you. But you're going to hear a lot in the commercial world about cap rate when it comes to apartment complexes or any kind of commercial real estate investment. And a capitalization rate is an expected rate of return on an investment. Now, I try to be as succinct as I can without getting into multiple formulas because of the time that we have together. But if you think of the price of maybe a 50-unit apartment complex up here in Boston, it's a lot more expensive than a 50-unit apartment complex in, say, Huntsville, Alabama. So the prices are different. And because of that, the cap rates are different. The lower the cap rate, the lower expected return on the investment. So in Boston, for example, the capitalization rate is around 3.5-4% for that 50-unit apartment complex. Whereas in comparison, in Huntsville, Alabama, for example, the building costs less, but the cap rate or expected rate of return could be higher, maybe 6-7%. So that's how we begin to get a quick sniff test. What's the trade value of an asset in a marketplace, and that's specific to each market? Then there's cash on cash return, right? That's the capital in and the return that we get on that capital. As you begin to investigate these investments, you'll see a lot of conversation and pretty impressive looking numbers, if you will, around what's called an IRR. That stands for an internal rate of return. That's a calculation that general partners like us will do on either a fund or an individual investment. And it's a calculation that shows the value of investor capital working over time. That's the best way to describe that. When you come across that, you're going to remember IRR is value of capital over time. Equity multiple is another way to look at an investment. So an example would be if an opportunity shows its pro forma, what the GP, the general partner, believes the deal will do, and they say this is a targeted 2x, for example, a 2 equity multiple. What that means is if an investor has the ability or the intent to put in, say, $100,000 into an investment, at the end of that investment, all cash flow and any profit at time of disposition, that investor would expect to have returned back their principal 100 and made 100. That would be a 2x or a 2 equity multiple. So that's a number that you can refer to when you look at any opportunities going forward if you choose. LP return requirements, risk adjusted. What does that that LP, that limited partner, that retail investor, what is their tolerance for return? What is their tolerance for risk? Do they just like solid, slow and steady? Do they like a little bit of upside? Do they just want to live in cash flow? So we take all of those things into consideration, cash flows versus appreciations, when we're making matches with investor partners. Again, look, we know that the cycles of real estate are pretty predictable. Even if you go back to the crash 2008-09, around that period of time, we're seeing some duplication of the market now. I don't know where your head is or where you believe we are in a market cycle, but we pulled data to support what you're seeing here on this slide. I personally believe we're on the dotted line there on the horizontal. We're right where the blue line crosses that. You know, some people say we're not in a recession. Other people say we're in the recession. But what I do know is that there is a massive declining vacancy rate, meaning that people are looking to rent apartments. And because of that, we're now seeing a massive trend or transition from building to sell single family homes, you know, apartment complexes, but now building to rent, which is why we're here today to learn what that looks like. What is the difference between acquisitions and development? Why is one maybe more attractive than the other? A statistic that I will throw in there right now is we can build brand new assets for less than the cost of buying existing assets right now. Because of all the capital that came into the marketplace, it increased the costs of multifamily units exponentially. We saw that compression in the cap rate that I just shared with you. So we started seeing the huge amount of money come in, expecting a lower rate of return because there was so much of it. So it didn't make sense to buy existing units, which is why we've doubled down onto the ability to build ground up. So real estate acquisitions pertains to the purchase and operation of an existing building. Development is ground up construction, taking land, entitling the land, developing the land, building the product, putting it in the market, leasing it up. It's a longer journey, but we feel at this time in the marketplace, it's absolutely the right strategy. Now, that strategy is not as strong in other markets as it is to some markets. And we'll talk about where we like to do this in a little while with you. So, phases of development. There's pre-purchase. That's the conversations, if you will. There's conceptual. We purchase the land. Then we start going through planning and approval. We got to bring in our engineers, our entitlement work, our architectures. We have many, many meetings with the city. What do they want? What don't they want? What will they allow us to do? What won't they allow us to do? It's intensive. It's really intensive. But once we get to that point of pre-construction and into construction, that's when the magic really starts to happen, because we can visually see what it is that we're going to be creating in that community. Once construction is complete, we get into lease up and we turn over assets to our property management team. They lease up the asset, manage the asset, work with the tenants, maximize the income, decrease the expenses, and leading us towards disposition. And as I said to you before, we are highly confident that the institutions are ready to buy our assets, either at occupancy when it's leased up, or at disposition, maybe after 2 or 3 years of cash flow in a marketplace. So very exciting time. The team, we are the developer at Freedom Venture Investments. We're in the center of this business with combined maybe 60 odd years worth of experience in both development and existing properties. What do? Well, we research markets. We work with the regulatory agencies, like I said. We do things like I'm doing right now, where we look at debt and equity investors, find out whether we are a match, our business model is a match for their capital. We bring our team of architects and engineers in there. Got to pay the accountants, got to deal with the attorneys. By the way, I'm neither of which. I'm not giving anybody any financial or legal advice, but I love what I'm doing right now. I love sharing this experience, sharing this journey, because as I said, I too was once somebody who was just working in the JOB. and then got to find the power of real estate investing. And then my self-directed retirement account working with velocity because I had the intelligence and the knowledge to implement what I was learning. We got great relationships with brokers and appraisers. And then, of course, the guys in the tool belts. And I've been a contractor and managing contractors, being able to interact, motivate, push, and still bring fantastic products to the marketplace. So that's our wheelhouse. That's where we live. We don't just live there some of the time. We live there all of the time. I think it's important to share with you, we are not what's known as a syndicator. There are groups out there that get in between the developers and the capital. We chose early on in our career to not be that person. All of our capital that's raised, all of our investors are with us direct. They work directly with us and then directly into the investments that we work on. So again, exciting time for us going forward. So the if, where, and what, right? If we are going to develop something, where should we develop something, and what should that property be? That's really the high level market analysis that we look at. Once we've picked that market, we've picked that asset class, we know exactly what it is that we want to do, then that's based on analysis. We have, I would guesstimate, probably 200 data points that we work through to be able to get to the point of saying, okay, money's in escrow, we're buying this piece of land for this project. We look at the amount of space that's currently not occupied. Is there a demand in the market? We look at market rents. Are they increasing or decreasing? New construction, who are we competing with? If I build a 100-unit apartment complex, who am I competing with? Am I competing with old stock that is 100% occupied? Can I attract tenants from that old stock to a brand new building? So all of these mechanics, if you will, or thought processes are all part of its risk analysis at the end of the day. What is the very best scenario we can find based off of fundamentals and not off of guessings and maybes, right? Data-driven points is what we work with. We look at absorption rates, how quickly apartments are getting leased up, and then how much supply is out there. The reason I share all of this stuff with you is there is an immense amount of work that goes into this, an immense amount of work. We go through an immense amount of deal flow to be able to be where we are today. And where are we today outside of real estate? It's kind of tough right now. It really is kind of tough right now. It's the worst half of the year for stocks since 1970. That $5 trillion in wealth has been lost. And look, I'm going to share a little bit personally again about me. The day that I found out that my 401k through my employers, I was a firefighter and a paramedic in the city of Lynn, Massachusetts for 16 years. And the day I found out that somebody else made money on my money just by moving my money a couple of times within 401k programs, within fund structures and things of that nature, it really motivated me to educate myself and implement the education so that if I had challenges, it was on my decision making, not somebody else's. And, you know, the inflationary environment is causing a lot of people to be in that deer in the headlights moment. I'm going to make a very loud, proud, broad statement, if you will. The wealthy individuals, the 1%ers, the institutions, they have been chomping at the bit for the landscape that we are looking at right now, because they will be making massive amounts of capital in this down market, as we will at Freedom Venture Investments. That's our goal. That's our aim. We're okay with the supply chain challenges. I'll share that with you. We're okay with the labor shortage challenges. As long as we treat the information with maturity, risk analysis, what-if scenarios, we can have confidence going forward. Maybe I've given you some confidence already just in my enthusiasm for what is out there right now in the marketplace. You know, I look at the landscape and I get excited. I started in 2008 when anybody who was a real estate investor was treated as a leper, you know, like, don't get near me, it might be catching. But that was where I started, and it dramatically changed my life and continues to change my life today going forward. So the supply chain challenges, they're not going to be resolved easily or quickly, in our opinion. But one thing I will tell you is this, is if you know the problem is out there, I think we can all agree there is a solution to every problem. And for us in the development world, it's not that difficult of a problem to solve. As soon as we purchase a piece of land, we start ordering supplies. Our projects will have anywhere between 3 to 6, as many as 10 large containers on site, because all of our materials are on a 6-month lag and are getting delivered onto our site so that we're not waiting for anything. Time is always the challenge in any construction project. So we work ahead of that supply chain challenge going forward. Labor shortages. You know, why are there labor shortages out there? COVID created this migration that was unprecedented. Families began to consolidate during COVID. People said, I can't work outside of the home. How do I work from home? If I don't need to work from home, if I consolidate, I can reduce my incomes. I can take care of my older family. We lost, I believe, somewhere around 3 million potential workers in the workforce. On top of that, some of the political environment was very, I don't want to say offensive, because then it's a political discussion. We're not going to have it. But the political environment was not welcoming to immigrants into the country. Well, the immigrant population was a huge part of our labor force as well. And that diminished greatly. So when that labor force diminishes, the cost of labor has increased. Well, we take that into consideration. It's not something that stops us from doing our business. We have the ability now to be able to put great teams together because we work with national builders. So here it is, the inflationary environment. Very quickly, I'm not going to spend a ton of time here. You know, if you pay for a gallon of gas in the past 30, 60 days, I don't need to have an inflation discussion with you. But why is inflation doing what it's doing? It's a simple supply-demand imbalance. There are trillions and trillions of dollars of capital in the marketplace chasing goods and services. Supply chain shut down, business shut down. It has yet to be able to ramp up and meet that capital supply. That is the most simplest of descriptions, if you will, of inflation. Too much money, not enough goods and services. So how does the Federal Reserve address that? How do they fix that? Well, they raise the cost of borrowing. They raise the cost of capital because they believe if they do that, they'll stop the movement of money, they'll shrink it down, and thereby shrink inflation. We haven't seen any success. CPI customer price index, I believe, dropped from 8.5 to 8.3 last month. The core PCE, which is what the Fed looks at, hasn't moved either. We know that today, as of today, what is it, the 21st, I believe, or the 20th? What's today's day? The 21st, the Fed is going to meet, and they're going to raise rates again, and the stock market will respond to that again. And again, we at Freedom Venture Investments and our business plan are prepared for what that environment looks like. You know, they're signaling these aggressive rates. They've continued to do it. They are trying to squash the movement of money in the marketplace. Look, I'm not a graduate of Harvard or Yale University bringing my, you know, my economics degree experience to the marketplace. I'm not. I'm really fundamentally a sticks and bricks guy with analysis teams around me and behind me to point our company in the right direction. But I would ask you a question. 86,000 new IRS agents. What is an IRS agent's job description? Is to go out and do what? Right? Bring capital back to the federal government. So if they bring that money back, they got to take it from somewhere, and they reduce capital in the marketplace. I personally believe that might, I don't know, just a thought, might also be a strategy on reducing the environment, the inflationary environment. There is approximately, look at these numbers on the far left, $1.5 trillion over the past 12 months of international capital has come in to buy up fund bond market. So if the fund, if they're selling their bonds, they're going through quantitative tightening. Quantitative easing is more money in. Quantitative tightening is pulling the money back. And they're doing that by selling bonds to international investors. United States of America is on sale. It will continue to be on sale. So interest rates, long-term average 5.7 for the retail. And then the long-term average, the cost of Fed funds rate is at 4.7. you know, we talk about these numbers and, you know, people are like throwing their hands up at a 6%. I know that maybe some of you on this call remember, right? Remember the 12 to 18% interest rates, and yet the country still performed, right? We still were in business. It's the Fed's only tool in their toolbox. And I personally don't believe it's going to work. So we are bullish into the inflationary environment. Here's the capital. This is the money that's in the marketplace right now. It's the first time. This is basically an anomaly that household debt and household cash, those lines are crossing. Happened back in 86 through 91. And now we're seeing it again. Anomalies have always, in my mind, correlated to opportunities. When I see massive supply and supply demand imbalances, that's opportunity for us. And we continue to look for that kind of data going forward. So if raising rates takes longer than anticipated and they're unable to take down inflation, they may try to push us into a recession. And I think an argument could be made that they're trying to do that. GDP is still growing. Unemployment is still low. There's so much conflicting data out there. What do you do? Right? What do you do as an investor? Who do you listen to? I would just suggest we all breathe. We're going to be okay. We'll get through the environment that we're looking at right now. Investors will make decisions based on fundamentals, and we will all be okay. The only challenge I see out there is doing nothing. Doing nothing and leaving capital sitting still causes capital to lose value. We all know that, especially with an inflationary rate of, you know, north of 8% going forward. So with all of that, what could be the opportunity? As I said from the beginning and why we're here today, build for rent is the opportunity that we see in the marketplace. We've identified opportunities where we are able to deal with the supply-demand imbalance, the lack of housing in the marketplace, the high demand in the marketplace. And as I said earlier on the presentation, it now is cheaper for us to build an asset than it is to go out and buy an existing asset and reposition it. These are renderings. The property on the top left-hand side is actually under construction right now. That's in the Cape Coral market, Cape Vista Apartments. That's a 106-unit apartment complex. What you see there are renderings and drawings that our architects are putting together for some of our single-family built-for-rent master deed communities. Let me say that again. It's a mouthful. Single-family master deed built-for-rent communities. So instead of a 106 apartment complex, what if it was 106 single-family homes all on one deed? That's also a multifamily asset. It's now the subsection, and we see a massive amount of interest in there. Who wants it? Well, it's the millennials. It's the millennials. They are now the largest population, if you will, in our economy. They're looking for home ownership, and we know what happened to the cost of single-family homes, so they're priced out of the market. I'm the father of a millennial. If you've got millennials on the call, or if you're a millennial, maybe you resonate with this, but you know, my son is not motivated to own that single family home. He understands the cost of capital. He understands that if he does buy it, he's not buying it for any kind of immediate appreciation. It's got to be maybe a 15, 20 year investment for him to be able to create equity in that home. And look, they're mobile. Let's just be honest. The millennials are mobile. My son doesn't know if he wants to live up here in Massachusetts or out in Colorado. So what if he could move to a community, find a beautiful A-class single-family home that was within his price range and all of the amenities, not pay taxes, have goods and services on site, maybe a swimming pool, maybe, you know, this is what the built-for-rent single-family community is servicing. And at the same time, it's servicing our older population who no longer wants to deal with maintenance of either a condo or a single family home. They like the idea of somebody else taking care of those headaches for them. Apartment vacancies are at the lowest they've been historically. Apartment vacancies across the country, as you can see on the slide there, the vacancy rate is down to about 2.4%. So if there's no apartments and there's a ton of people who want them, supply demand imbalance, what's the result of that? Rent increases year over year have reached beyond fathomable amounts, right? You can see that there's a rent increase of approximately 17.3%. Now, this is very important. Again, if you like to take notes, now would be a very important note to take. If you looked at an investment, let's say I'm an investor and I look at an investment from a GP, a general partner, and they can show me that there has been rent increases, say 17% year over year for the past year, and then they project out at that same number for the next 5 or 10 years. I would ask you, is that a red flag or is that not a red flag? Now, for me, with my experience, I would consider that to be a red flag. I don't think we can guarantee or pro forma forward at 17% rent increases year over year. But could we do maybe 3 to 5% year over year and be conservative in our underwriting? Because the more money that comes in on a multifamily asset, the more valuable that it is. So just a little point for you as you begin to explore this journey going forward. Vacancy rates, incredibly low. Rent rates, or the cost of rent going up year over year, is incredibly high. That's the environment. That's the anomalies, if you will. Apartment rent growth made up the ground lost during COVID. As soon as we released from COVID, we all came out of that. And it's like, I want to go. I want to move. I want to see. I want to rent. I want to, you know, get back into the community going forward. U.S. apartment vacancies and rent growth, the performance on those, the macro drivers, like I said, have been the undersupply and then also the millennials and the older generation looking for these opportunities. You know, the millennials, they're right there. They're in that period where they're looking for a home, if you will. Here's the cost of single family homes. This blows my mind. Statistically, a homeowner needs an earning income of approximately $113,000 to be able to afford a medium price home in our society today. Think about that for a second. $113,000, that's half of an accredited investor benchmark, if you will, going forward. So the cost of the home has gone up, and yet at the same time, the mortgage rates have gone up. So if the cost of the capital is higher, plus the price of the property is higher, it's such a difficult environment and landscape for home ownership. The millennials are like, I'm done. I'll wait till this changes. Where can I rent? Where can I receive? So what's the barrier to entry for most investors in this world? Well, it's time, right? The time to actually underwrite deals, put teams together, et cetera. The knowledge, again, kind of works hand in hand. And capital. Now, these quality investments have been pigeonholed or set aside for the institutional investors and one percenters for generations. My partner, Walter Nowicki, he says the quality of deals that we do are the ones that used to get done on the ninth hole of the golf course, right? Golf course deals is the way he describes them. So having access to these deals and the capital to invest in them. I'm sure you're familiar with the Jobs Act. When the Obama administration was in power, they passed a law on the back end of the crash that allowed retail investors access to these deals through a GP partner like ourselves. And that's changed a lot of the retirement accounts. It's changed a lot of the investing strategies that people have used going forward. And then that bottom word is critically important: trust. Right? When a retirement account is invested, that capital is trusting that the capital is going to go to work exactly as described in the business plan, otherwise known as a PPM, for example, a private placement memorandum. Anytime capital is moved from a self-directed retirement account into an investment, that investment has to be noted by the custodian, which is what Entrust is. So they have to dot I's and cross T's. We as a GP partner have to abide by the laws, rules, and regulations of the Securities and Exchange Commission. So it's important that an investor is investing on the jockey, not necessarily the horse. Do that due diligence period, right? Ask the pertinent questions. You know, our deal flow goes through approximately 2,000 deals. We'll analyze 1,100 of those. So again, the work, we'll underwrite 500. We'll look at term sheets on 72, due diligence on 26 to potentially close on 24. Very cool. that 50% deal pipeline that you see there sourced off market. When I mentioned Walter Nowicki at the beginning, I said he was the secret sauce, if you will. Walter is one of those individuals that meets at that same breakfast joint every week in a market with a group of other individuals who knows what's going on. Maybe you understand what I'm saying, right? Those are the people that know the people at City Hall, that know the people at the county, that know the people at the state level, that know the people that are hurting, that know the people who need help. And that for us has been an absolute gateway, if you will, to very, very powerful investments that we take down here at Freedom Venture Investments. And we do it in the Gulf Coast region of Florida. I think the reasons for that are pretty well known. The population growth in Florida has been huge. For every one retiree that moves to Florida, it creates 3 to 4 service jobs, restaurants, medical, things of that nature. And then with the expansion and the results of COVID, that market absolutely blew up. And what I mean by that is this. Take a look at this data. This is from the city of Cape Coral, where we do business. They pulled down a study from the Reinhold Wolf Economic Research, and they asked them to do the data and find out exactly what they needed. What do we need for housing in our marketplace? And their unit demand, you can see on the first line there, 2019 through 27, their demand was for 1,800 units pretty much every year up until 2024. Then it jumped up into the 1900s, 23, 24, 25, and at 27, still at 1,900 units per year. Look at their deliverables and then their deficits. 2027, they're projected to be short 10,000 plus units in the market in comparison to the demand side of the equation. We love Fort Myers. We love Cape Coral. We're doing a ton of business in that market. And there's one of the economic reasons why we're there. So built for rent, single family living, multifamily appeal. These are homes. Think of those beautiful communities in Florida, gated communities, only now they're for rent communities. It's a classification that we call renters by choice, and it allows these people to choose to be in this environment, not because they necessarily can afford it, but there are so many other drivers that bring them to these communities, and they lease up incredibly quickly. There are a number of different builds that we look at, horizontal multifamily cottage types. We'll do townhomes, we do detached singles. We're not so much vested in the luxury single family market for rentals, but the amount of interest and the amount of capital that is moving to this asset class is unfathomable. Last count, there was approximately $85 billion chasing, institutional capital chasing these. Yardi Matrix institutions are flocking to build single family rentals. Globe Street Capital is pivoting from multifamily into the build-to-rent space. So we're always got our radar up, right? Reinforcing the decisions that we make in our own company going forward. We've talked about the macroeconomic drivers. The millennials can't afford a single-family home. They don't want to own a single-family home. The rental population is huge, huge. 15.7 million in large buildings, 10-plus units, is the portion of the rental market. And then you look at the 13.3, that's the smaller buildings. We are eating into that number with our single family built for rent communities. And this is what they look like. So this is our development pipeline. Super excited to share this with you. I think I've showed you that there are challenges in the commercial real estate investing world. I'm very confident that I also showed you that there are solutions to those problems. When I can build a single family 1,800 square foot home for approximately $147 to $155 a square foot, and that rents consistently at around $2,000 to $2,200 a square foot, you can do the math pretty quickly in your head to know that that could be an opportunity, right? It is for us. The 106 unit that you see there top left, that is already under construction. We anticipate going vertically on that very, very soon. We just bought in a large family office that invested with us on that property. Super excited to bring them into the team. The Freedom Venture Villas, you can see you have 380 units. That's in process, 134 units. Freedom Venture Villas community, Cape Coral, Florida. There's one on one side of the road, and then on the other side of the road is the other 134 unit that you see in the bottom left-hand corner. We'll take down the smaller ones. This one's also permitted, ready to go, 16 units. When I say opportunistic, I'm talking about an outsized return profile in comparison to a core or a core plus. Everything we're doing is in the opportunistic environment. What we've done is we've taken those properties and created a fund structure for our investment community. So think of a mutual fund on the stock market as multiple businesses in it. We take that same premise and we put multiple properties in one fund, giving investors diversification. So it's 8 development projects, Suncoast Build for Rent Fund, total of 1,115 total units. So what is the business plan of something like this? Because it's pretty substantial. So we look at it this way. There is a 1 to 2 year development process, maybe a little bit longer on some of the properties, maybe a little bit shorter on some of the other properties. That's why diversity we feel is important. Once all of these properties are built, they're then leased up. That lease up period takes maybe another year. And then overall a 4 to 5 year hold period for the properties. So when we look at disposition, when we look at exiting out and putting these over to the institutions, if it's not a hot market, if there isn't a high demand for them, what do? Well, we season the asset. We are never forced to sell. We are in control. And if we season an asset, we sit in what's called the cash flow. Now, if the market is hot, then we sell. We maximize our profit potential for us as a company and our investors. And we're able to de-risk the development world because we're not tied to just one asset. We're tied to multiple assets across the fund structure going forward. You can see on our pins there, all of our properties are in that Suncoast region. It's great being in Boston in the winter because I get to go down there and it's a company trip. It's not a vacation. Thank you very much. I learned that in a seminar, same place. I shouldn't say that stuff. I'm not your accountant, not your attorney. But anyway, you get the idea, right? Doing business in Florida has a lot of upside potential for investors as well. So Cape Vista, this is that 106 unit project. I pulled some pictures down on that. Super excited about this. We anticipate this one being complete in the next 10 months, start lease up at that period of time. It's got an outsized return profile as an individual property. And then we put that inside the tier in the fund structure as well. Gets to be super exciting. Renderings of the visual on there. So this isn't guesswork, guys. This isn't, I think we're going to do this. I mean, we're doing it. We recently took one of our monthly investor updates and we shot a drone video of the site. Kind of cool to watch what's going on through the drone video and then also a live feed. Look, I like to play in the dirt, big boys with big toys. Nothing more exciting than watching those earth movers doing their thing. The pads are going in currently, roads are going in, curbs are going in, vertical right after that. Cape Coral demographics supports everything that we've talked about. 8th largest city in the state of Florida. The population is getting younger. The amount of capital that population earns is also increasing. Everything works towards us being in there. So again, our development pipeline looks like this. It is now a fund structure with us. Look, investigation, it really is. It's an opportunity to ask questions. I'm very blessed to be able to see how many people join us and how many people stay with us. I know that the interest is there because I've watched the attendance stay incredibly high on this webinar today. I get to see that. So that makes me feel good. It knows I'm giving you some value on the education side. So what's next would be implementation. What could that look like? So I appreciate you letting me on here, Tony, Andrew, for the work that you've done in the background to approve our presentation. That's as much as I've got. I think I did pretty good. It's not easy for me to stay under an hour window, but at 2:50, I'm feeling pretty strong at 50 minutes on the presentation here. So what's next? October? I guess that's over to you, Andrew and Tony. I'll let one of you guys pick up the ball there, and I'll mute out my mic unless you have a question.
Thank you, David. So what's next? Our upcoming webinar to be determined in October. It will be October 19th. If you have any feedback or topic requests, please let us know in the survey as you leave. For more information on self-directed IRAs, please visit our website, theentrustgroup.com, and visit our Learning Center. And don't forget to follow us on all social media updates. A copy of this recording will also be available on our Learning Center once the webinar has completed. Time for questions. There is a question box, so feel free to type in your questions. We'll take them as they come in, whether they're for me on the IRA side or for Dave on the real estate side. So our first question, Dave, is going to be for you, is how do you mitigate against location geo risk if you only invest in one state?
Ah, that's a great question, and it's not a unique, no disrespects to the person who asked that. Population growth is the driving factor. When we have built through the Florida demand cycle, then we know which states we want to target next. We'll look at the Carolina markets. We look at some of the Texas markets. You know, if you've done any research in commercial real estate investing, you know that there are some markets that are driving growth a lot quicker than others. The undersupply is so huge. I will be in the ground a long time before that problem, we believe, has been solved. So we don't see the demand imbalance being a problem, especially, again, in the Florida market. It's huge. There's a lot of land down there. There's a lot of people down there as well. I don't know if you've had a chance to get down to Florida recently, but, you know, get down there, drive through some of the towns and the communities, the secondary and the tertiary markets, and you will see nothing but growth going on. And growth is only there because of the supply, right? The demand side of the equation. So great question. But again, we're gonna build through the recession. We're going bullish in the marketplace today.
Great. Thank you, David. Next question is, yes, if you signed in late or you joined us late, copies of the presentation will be sent out, and they are also available for download on the NTrust website in our Learning Center. Next one for you, Dave. Is the fund going all cash on the development deals, or what percentage is funded by debt?
Yeah, great question again. So we tend to use LP capital at the time of land acquisition. What an investor has an expectation of is a pretty robust return profile if they stay through the entitlement phase of the deal. Some investors want to get out at that point, and they can choose to do so. And then what we do is we bring in the debt once we have what's called a GMP, which is a gross maximum price contract, an AIA contract with our GCs, our general contractors. At that point, I go to our debt partners. We look at the deal, we look at the leverage, we look at the pro formas, and then we'll take down the construction debt. Construction debt tends to be anywhere between 15 and 18 months. The loan that we're signing on this week is actually a 15-month loan, but we can build so fast in Florida that we can then transition right out of the more expensive construction debt and into the perm financing or permanent financing, which is your typical 30-year fixed. Once we get into that debt, then it's a different scenario for us. We give optionality to investors. Some want to stay in a deal for cash flow for a longer run. Some investors want to get in and get out and move on to another project. So we like to keep optionality in our fund structure and also in some of our individual deals, but they tend to be a little more restrictive because they don't have the diversity that a fund structure would have with multiple properties in there. So I know I can talk kind of long. Cash on the land up until the point of having a good contract in hand, then acquiring construction debt, and then executing from there.
Great. Thank you, David. So just a little basis on the questions. We can't give any investment, tax, or structure advice. So one of the questions, kind of two of the same questions, but maybe for the individual that asked the investing question, when Dave answers this question, it might answer what you asked that we just can't talk about on the webinar. But if you have direct investment questions, feel free to reach out to David directly, as his contact information is on the screen. But having said that, David, what's the minimum investment? Do you have a minimum that's required?
Yeah, we do. I always love that. What's the minimum investment? We go with a $50,000 minimum investment in our fund structures. We find that is the sweet spot for most retail investors. What I will say is this, is some investors are like, you know, do you only work with accredited investors? The answer to that is no. We have investment strategies for both accredited and non-accredited investors. We have fixed income funds as well as our 506C Reg D accredited investor funds. So, you know, we've made it a point to be able to service the need of our clients. But most of our clients are at a 50, well, not most. I mean, I've got investors who write checks in the millions, but the minimum investment for an accredited investor is 50,000.
Great, thank you. What's your process for determining initial construction costs, dollars per square foot? I know you did touch on that briefly in the webinar, but if you just want to reiterate dollars per square foot.
Another great question as well. You know, we have an incredibly fluid marketplace. Walter Nowicki, again, our chief investment officer, not only our chief investment officer, but also a general contractor in the market for over a quarter of a century. So because of that, our pricing is very, very aggressive. We look at the amount of doors we can put on a piece of land. And from there, we can begin to run our numbers up until the point that we get a more solid gross maximum price contract from our GC. Just to give you a flavor and a feel, our main GC is a national contractor out of Chicago who works in a number of different states across the country. That gives him buying power, that gives him relationship power, came into the Florida market with us. We built that relationship with him over a year or so, and then we put our local guys right in there, same quality of investors. And then we look, it goes back to my single family days, Tony, in the sense of I always want to like motivate my general contractors, not only financially, but inclusion, right? To feel good about being a part of our team because it's a team-based business. And because of that, we get very aggressive pricing. Can it fluctuate? Yeah. You know, are there change orders in a project? Yes, in the single family up to maybe four unit world, but once we get into an AIA contract, it becomes a lot more constrictive for both the GC and also us as the GP, the general partners. Like we have an understanding going forward. There's built in variances and variables in a lot of the financing. So we're just good at what we do. We've been doing it so long that we have a range of price per square foot, depending on what the quality of asset is that we're delivering to the market. Hope that answers the question. It was kind of circular, but hey, I am who I am. I'm not going to change right now, Tony.
That's great. Thank you. Again, any questions on rate of returns or annualized returns, please reach out to David directly. We'll keep it open for another minute or so if anybody has any further questions. All right, well, thank you everybody for joining us today. We hope it was a wealth of information on both sides. Again, you can download a copy of the webinar from our Learning Center, and we look forward to hearing from you all soon. Thank you very much. And David, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate it. And thanks for being on the call, folks. Take care.
Likewise. Take care, everybody.